Srila Vyasadeva, despite his having compiled such a huge volume of Vedic literatures, nevertheless felt dissatisfied at heart. And he said in text 30 of chapter 4 of the first canto, Tatapi bhattame hayo yatma chaivatma vibhu asampana ivavati brahma vachasya sattama. I am feeling incomplete. Although I am myself fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas, he was feeling incomplete. Narada Muni began, spiritual master began to instruct him as to the cause of his incompleteness, as to the cause of his dissatisfaction. And he began to chastise him. Last Friday, we read some of the verses. What I'd like to do now is go through them, all these verses, and then we'll go back once again and go through them and hear parts of Srila Prabhupada's purports. First of all, Vyasadeva requested Narada Muni, please tell me what the difficulty is. Immediately, Narada said that you have not, this is text 8, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the problem. You are feeling alienated. You are feeling incomplete. You are feeling despondent, like something is missing. Here is the point. You have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That philosophy, which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord, is considered worthless. So who is the glorification meant to satisfy? It is meant to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord. Otherwise, if it's done for other purposes, it is not actual, proper glorification, and it actually won't satisfy either the Lord, Yatma Supasidati, or the living entity who is doing the glorification. Although, this is text 9, although great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles, beginning with religious performances. So dharma, artha, religiosity to get gain, artha, material gain, to get, and with that material gain, purchase kama, or fulfill one's desires, or ultimately, possibly even take liberation. But these have been done by Vyasadeva, but you have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who can alone sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental realm, they do not derive any pleasure there. Even if these words are very wonderfully put together, artistically, metaphorically, similarly, using all alliterations and poetic devices, wonderfully put together, artistic, satisfying the finest sentiments of a man, still, they're rejected by persons who are transcendentalists and considered the pilgrimage place of crows. In other words, they are a place where people look for refuse, refused garbage. And on the other hand, That literature, which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, a different creation. It is not composed of very fine and elaborate material energy. It's composed of something different. It is transcendental. It is beyond matter. It is beyond the material world. It is spiritual. And therefore, because it is spiritual, it can touch the heart of the living entity. It's composed of something else. Material items touch the mind, they touch the intelligence, they touch the body, but they cannot touch the soul, and we are souls, and therefore we ourselves, the soul, cannot be satisfied dealing with the realm of matter. So it is a different creation, full of transcendental words, directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. A revolution from the inside out, changing the consciousness from having turned our back on Krishna to turning towards Krishna in his service. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, just the opposite of the mundane material literatures, which are very well composed, even if these transcendental literatures are imperfectly composed, they are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest, who understand that they and accept that they are just tiny, insignificant souls, no false ego, those kind of persons. Wishing to serve the Lord, they accept literatures that are transcendental despite the imperfectness in the composition. Text 12. So there's good and bad compositions are from the material sense. Material compositions rejected. Spiritual compositions accepted. But not only are spiritual compositions accepted, but a special kind of spiritual composition. Naiskamyam apachutta bhava varjitam nasovate ganamalam naranjanam kutapuna shashrar abhadramishvare nacharpitam karma yadapakaranam. That even if a literature, if a literary composition is spiritual in the sense that it doesn't deal with the material world, but only deals with the spiritual existence, the Brahman level, such literature, nasobhyate, it is not beautiful. It is not wonderful. It is rejected because it doesn't have achyuta bhav. Rejected because it has no relationship. It doesn't say anything about the glories of the infallible Lord. Even if it is spiritual. So Narada is talking and glorifying and requesting Vyasadeva to compose a spiritual literature that is beyond the negation of material literature. Specifically, he wants something that glorifies Krishna, and that only will satisfy the soul. So knowledge of self-realization, knowledge that we are souls, even though free from all material affinity, not even tinged with material attractions, it does not look well, nasobhyate gyanamalam naranjanam, if devoid of a conception of the infallible Lord. What then? So if that's rejected, what then is the use of fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature? Can we accept that? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if one has actually concluded that no material activity, no material karma, fruit of activity, situation can make me happy, satisfy me, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he has taken the greatest step towards spiritual realization. So what then is the use of fruit of activities which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature? Indriyas indriyasya arate raga dvesha vyavastita. Attraction may be there, but these things, they must bring pain to the soul. They are temporary. And we long, the soul longs for the eternal. But yet there is a saving grace of activities, even in the material world. They are painful from the very beginning and transient by nature if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord. Nacharpitam karma yadapakaranam. Oh, Vyasadeva. This is continued. So good material literature is rejected. Even if it is wonderfully composed, spiritual literature about Krishna is accepted, even if it has flaws in its presentation. And even spiritual literatures on the Brahman level are rejected. What to speak of materialistic activities, which are painful from their very beginning, unless they are offered in the service of Krishna. Krishna kamarpanam. Now, Vyasadeva has written about dharma, artha, kama, moksha, but all these are self-centered, not self with a capital S, nor even meaning Krishna-centered, or self-centered in the sense of the eternal soul, but they are centered around the false ego. I will perform religious activities. I will gain artha, gain something. Kama, my desires will be, and I will gain moksha. But text 14. What is the result of anything that is not Krishna-centered and spoken of? Association, books, this and that. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord, it simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. So not only have you not given the ultimate thing that can actually bring satisfaction, you have caused a disservice. Because you, by describing Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, they already desire self-centered, selfish things. And you've played right into the hands of Maya in that sense. You've agitated the minds. Yes, I want this. Yes, I want that. Yes, I want that. 15, the people in general, Narada says, are naturally inclined to enjoy. And you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. If you perform such and such sacrifice to please such and such demigod, you will enjoy in such and such way. You will enjoy. You can go to the heavenly planets. You can have a wonderful wife. You can have unlimited wealth, great health. Your enemies can be destroyed. Just perform these sacrifices. You have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. And actually, this isn't what religion is about at all. This is verily condemned and is quite unreasonable because they are guided under your instructions. They will accept such activities in the name of religion. And they will hardly care for prohibitions. They will say, well, Srila Vyasadeva said, it's okay. Yes, we should do this. They'll pull out the Vedas as their authority. You've caused a disservice. But of course, we know that the Vedas give a gradual progression, so how one can actually advance through karma, through jnana, through yoga, to worship, upasana kanda. So it's given in that way, So if someone is only told that you must give up everything, Savagamam Pratyaja, and worship the Lord, people aren't going to do that. This is an argument for taking a very gradual process using these Vedic methodologies. But Srila Vyasadeva says, Narada Muni says, the Supreme Lord is unlimited. It's true. Only a very expert personality retired from the activities of material happiness deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. It's actually for the most qualified personalities. It's true, and most people aren't, in one sense, capable of rendering pure devotional service, of fully surrendering to Krishna, because people do have material attachments and attractions. Yet, therefore, those who are not very well situated due to material attachments, they should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness. But how? By making it seem that there are intermediary goals of great value? No, but through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. Because the Lord is so attractive that by hearing about Him, one becomes purified on one hand and becomes attracted to Him on the other. This is the process that Narada Muni is recommending to Vyasadeva. Not a very gradual process, yes, just like one time. Probably it was in 1969. One devotee wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, since Krishna consciousness is above the Brahman level of understanding, that if one is a devotee, he's above that, I think it is better that I first become Brahman realized and then come back and take up devotional service. And Prabhupada's reply was, are you chanting your 16 rounds a day? And the devotee wasn't. Because the mind will give any excuse, even very laudable, noble excuses, to avoid giving myself to Krishna, even spiritual excuses. But this is the process. Even if one isn't qualified, because the Bhagavatam is also known as Paramhansa Samhita, it is meant for those who are completely transcendental. So one could say, I shouldn't read this, I shouldn't take part in Krishna consciousness because I'm not that transcendental. Yet, the process that's being recommended is taking part in Krishna consciousness, but give them the way of transcendental realization by your goodness, through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Lord. Don't cheat them and give them another goal. Let them hear about Krishna. So one can say, because there are these different approaches, one can say that people should be gradually engaged in great intermediary steps, such as performing Vedic rituals and material desires, and approve that. Or everyone should be engaged in Krishna consciousness. So what happens if one will surrender to Krishna on some inspiration, and then after some time he realizes that I have so many material desires, I can't live up to that standard that's being spoken of in the Bhagavatam. He's a real loser, such a person, because the same thing is spoken of in the Bhagavad Gita at the end of the sixth chapter. He's lost everything. He has neither a position in the material world nor a strong position in devotional service. So what's the answer to that? Text 17 says, one who has forsaken his material occupation to engage in devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage, yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. There is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. He's guaranteed to be unsuccessful. Why? Because time will crush everything. It is guaranteed. Everything gained is not really gained at all. Just like if we take our life, and if we say if someone has taken a movie of our life from our birth till our death, and then and in that life, naturally there are so many high points and so many low points. There is great love and there is great gain, and then there is great disasters and hatreds like that. But if we took that movie that, say, lasted 80 years and sped it up to 40 years, just doubled the speed, and then sped it up again to 20 years, the whole thing took place. Instead of taking 80 years to watch it in real-time speed, we could watch the whole thing sped up in 20 years. Or we sped it up still further to 1 year. We could watch our whole life in 1 year. Or if we sped it up to 6 months, speed it up. Or we sped it up to 2 weeks. We could watch the whole life in 2 weeks or 1 hour. We sped it up so fast. Our whole life. So our great gain, we won a great award. We were made the president of the company when we were 55 years old. Before we retired. And that only lasted in the movie for an eighth of a second. How much happiness would we get from that? So temporary. The gains are temporary. Everything gets turned and crushed by time. Moved on. The times when we felt great misery also only lasted an eighth of a second. We'd be relieved about those. Our greatest embarrassments, most difficult times. Therefore, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, there is one chapter called the description of time, beginning from the atom, where a perspective on time is built up. And finally, starting in the combination of the smallest elements of some hex atom or something, how long it takes for them to be put together. And a frame of reference is time is built up to the lifetime of Lord Brahma, which is so long, it's inconceivable to us, and that's compared to a flash of lightning above the ocean. So we look at good and bad, gain and loss, in the frame of reference of what's actually a long period of time or eternity, and our perspective changes. So though one fully engaged in occupational duties, what does he actually gain? And on the other hand, someone who engages in devotional service, even though he may fall down in an immature stage, there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. Time must work for a devotee, and it must work against every material endeavor. It crushes it mercilessly. This morning, what Prabhupada was repeating, how one of his godbrothers, who is German, said that during the First World War, a famous story that everyone probably knows, all the religious mothers and all the ladies in Germany were praying, "Oh God, make sure that our husbands, our brothers, our sons come home from the war." And when they didn't, Prabhupada explained, all the people became atheists. But why? Because they didn't survive the war. But who in the whole world survives? There's not one person who is alive at this time, from the baby who was just born 1 second ago somewhere in some village somewhere, to the oldest man now, in 100 or 120 years, not one person who's alive now is going to be alive. So if we think that God is cruel for not bringing my son or my brother or my husband back from the war, he's the most cruel because no one survives. The greatest of Holocausts, when things are looked at on the material level. But on the eternal level, with this perspective of eternity, things are completely different. So on the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, no matter what he gains nothing. Everything will be crushed and taken away. And therefore, text 18, persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined, tasyaiva hetu prayati tukovido, they should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patala. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries even though we do not desire. Our karma is going to work. We're going to get some happiness according to our karma. We're going to get some misery according to our karma. Why endeavor for these happinesses, more material happiness, and to avoid material misery? Why endeavor for these things? Come and go according to our karma. Better to engage our time to gain something which is completely unavailable in the material world. Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasito bhavato mati. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or another, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruit of workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. That is an eternal gain. It sits within the heart. And until it fully blossoms, whatever we have gained in Krishna consciousness is of a different quality. Until that fully blossoms, it will never leave us. It is ours. It is our gain. It is actually our gain. The taste of Krishna consciousness, whatever level we may have tasted it on, it is ours. It is a true gain. While every other happiness in the material world will be stolen away by time, and it is never again. It is a loss to take one's time in doing that. So the preaching is very strong from a very high level. I was speaking to one young I met in Vrindavan many years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And then after coming here and getting some taste in Vrindavan and Krishna consciousness, she joined and took initiation. This isn't certainly her alone who would say this. She said, I remember those days when in Vrindavan and in the temple serving, those were the happiest days of my life. So many devotees speak like this. They go on maybe, and they may make millions of dollars even, struggling in the material world, trying to satisfy desires, not being on a level where they can remain engaged fully in hearing and chanting, but they say that those were the happiest days of my life. There's a taste in there which is simply not available in the material world. And that taste, of course, if it's cultivated, how is it cultivated? By hearing and chanting in an offenseless way. Fenceless way, and then that creeper will grow more and more, and it will eventually take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna in the spiritual world and give its fruit, which is prema. That taste is the only possession that a person really can have, the only thing of value he can really have. He can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So he's preaching very strong. You have made a mistake by presenting material, temporary things as if they were the goal. Your intention was very wonderful. But it was a mistake. Better to give them right from the very beginning the real thing of let them hear about the Lord. And that is the medicine. And then this verse, this next verse, text 20, is, I found it especially interesting. Especially when one looks at this verse in the context of Srila Vyasadeva's feeling of incompleteness, which in the fourth chapter, text 30, I'm feeling incomplete, although I am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. What is that incompleteness? Incompleteness means something is missing, alienated, not in harmony with the people around me, the circumstances around me, separate. Something is missing. So in this verse, text 20, Narada explains, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is himself this cosmos, and still he is aloof from it. From him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In him it rests, and unto him it enters after annihilation. In other words, the Lord, there is nothing separate from him. It is impossible. That is the meaning of the absolute truth. We cannot go anywhere, be anywhere, in any way be separated from him. That is what Maya does. Maya doesn't exactly separate us from Krishna, but what Maya does is separate our consciousness from Krishna, or make it appear to us that Krishna is not with us, that we have a separate existence apart from, like the sun, like the cloud doesn't cover the sun, it covers our eyes, so we cannot see the sun, and that is the function of Maya. So Krishna is everywhere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is himself the cosmos. Still he is aloof from it, he is everything, everywhere, and yet he is in Goloka Vrindavan. But from him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated, in him it rests, and unto him it enters after annihilation. So he is everywhere. There's no question of you being incomplete, actually. You have your relationship with Krishna. Everyone has their relationship with Krishna. There are no circumstances that occur by chance. Everything is, we are living in Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada explains in one purport of the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee lives in the mercy of Krishna. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to that person, nor is he ever lost to me. Tasyaham sulabha parta nitya tasyoga. Always connected with Krishna, by always seeing him. Tate anukampam susamikshamano. There's no incompleteness, in fact. There is no alienation, in fact. There is no separation, in fact. So your good self knows this. I have given only a synopsis. There is nothing that exists. This is Chatusloki Bhagavatam, which we'll also read in the second and third cantos. So your goodness has perfect vision. You yourself can know the Supersoul Personality of Godhead because you are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Please, therefore, describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, still more vividly. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of advancement of knowledge, namely austerities, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of the hymns and charity, culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. That is what you should do. Don't describe anything as if it is separate from Krishna. People have a tendency already to separate things from Krishna in their minds, but nothing is actually separated from Krishna. So talk about Krishna. Tell of his pastimes. Everything will come. You already know all this. So please describe this properly. Yaru Tamas Loka Ganarna Varna Nam. This is the conclusion of the Kaviviras, the actual learned persons. On the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke on it every day for 1 month, for 3 months in Dhaka. For 3 months, he just spoke about that one verse. Don't describe things in poetic language separate from the Lord. This is reality, that there is nothing unconnected with Him. And therefore, everyone who perceives things disconnected from Krishna, they will feel imperfect in their own hearts and insufficient in their own hearts. So give them the medicine. Talk about Krishna. Okay. So we'll start, we'll go back now to the 12th verse. Nice. Karmyam apyachutta bhava varjitam nasobhyate nasobhyate gyanamalam naranjanam kutapuna shashvara bhadram ishvare nachopitam karma yadapakaranam. So even knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of infallible God. Don't just talk about Brahman even. It has to be the Lord Himself. And ultimately that Lord is Krishna. What then is the use of fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? We'll read from the beginning of Prabhupada's purport, we'll read about half of that. As referred to above, not only ordinary literatures devoid of the transcendental glorification of the Lord are condemned, but also Vedic literatures and speculation on the subject of impersonal Brahman when they are devoid of devotional service. When speculation on the impersonal Brahman is condemned on the above grounds, what then to speak of ordinary fruit of work, which is not meant to fulfill the aim of devotional service? So what should Vyas do? He shouldn't write these kind of literatures. What should he do? O Vyasadev, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. You have all the prerequisite qualifications, and what you should do? Thus, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. So first he has to realize that, and that, as we said, he's going to do, we'll read about that in the beginning of the 7th chapter. He will realize the Lord in trance, and then there's the last verse we read. After doing that, the instruction is to describe, give the transcendental descriptions of the Lord. Do that very vividly, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Prabhupada's purport will read starting in the second paragraph. There are thousands and thousands, this is 2.13, of literary men all over the world. And they have created many, many thousands of literary works for the information of the people in general. For thousands and thousands of years they've been doing this. Unfortunately, none of them have brought peace and tranquility on the earth. This is due to a spiritual vacuum in those literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures, especially the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, are specifically recommended to suffering humanity to bring about the desired effect of liberation from the pangs of material civilization, which is eating the vital part of human energy. What does that mean? It is eating the vital part of human energy. How is materialistic civilization eating the vitalness, the life of humans? How? How? Yes, how is it destroying the time? Wasting the time, unlimited ways to waste time. That's what material civilization is. Even the most noble endeavors, wasting time on the material level. And life's purpose is something completely different, to attain transcendence, to attain, to awaken our loving relationship with Krishna. But especially nowadays, there are so many ways the genius of man is applied to more and more creative ways that people can waste their time, which is the vital, vital energy. Vital means life, our time.
Right, but the main thing, that's one of the ways to waste time.
In pleasures, in temporary pleasures. But that's what civilization is. Attracted to the material world so that people's life will be spent and then they'll become old and miserable and cynical. And then they'll start looking at the young people. I see myself doing this. You start looking at the young people and you remember, oh, I remember when I could run and I could jump and I could do those things. Then the next thought is, I wish I could run and jump. And you're already preparing for your next birth. Well, you'll run and jump. Just starting thinking like that, that's what happens. You're preparing your next birth because of your desiring. And then on and on. And if you really want, and then you see the birds flying, how nicely they can fly. I wish I could fly like that. Swim under the water. I wish I could swim like that. Boy, it's such a, I love the water so much. So wonderful. I wish I never had to come out again. Preparing next life. We laugh because it's cute in one sense when we put it like that, but it's actually very dangerous. Just imagine if our consciousness was full. I wish I could love Krishna like the residents of Vrindavan. I wish I could serve so nicely. I wish I had a preaching spirit. I wish I actually fully understood I'm not my body. I was an eternal soul, Krishna's servant. How wonderful that would be. That's proper desiring. So instead, the pangs of material civilization, this is what the literatures do. They fill our hearts and minds with so many other desires. Which desires? Unlimited desires. The Bhagavad Gita is the spoken message of the Supreme Lord Himself, the Lord Himself recorded by Vyasadeva. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental narration of the activities of the same Lord Krishna, which can alone satisfy the hankering desires of the living being for eternal peace and liberation from miseries. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is meant for all the living beings all over the universe, for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. Such transcendental narrations of the pastimes of the Lord can be described only by liberated souls like Vyasadeva and his bona fide representatives, who are completely merged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. So this is why Prabhupada stressed book distribution so much. Book distribution, book publication, book writing, is because it's, these things are needed to create a transcendental revolution in the hearts of people. And if we don't, and if people don't read these kind of literatures, text 14, whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind. About a year ago probably, there was in Paris, an auto accident where there was some billboard, an advertisement up of a beautiful woman. And some person was driving along and he got distracted by that and he drove into a shop and killed so many people. So that's an extreme example. But whatever the mind, that's the way the mind works. it fixes on something, becomes attracted to it, accepts it, and it just holds on to that thing. And that desire is stored in the heart. So whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord, it simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind and entangle the mind in more desiring, more wants, more thinking, I need this, this will make me happy. And what is the result? Just more birth and death and birth and death and birth and death. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read some from the beginning. So he's chastising Vyas. Sri Vyasadeva is the editor of all descriptions of the Vedic literatures. And thus he has described transcendental realizations in different ways. Namely by fruit of activities, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and devotional service. Beside that, in his various Puranas, he has recommended the worship of so many demigods in different forms and names. The result is that people in general are puzzled how to fix their mind in the service of the Lord. They're always disturbed about finding the real path of self-realization. Sri Naradadeva is stressing this particular defect in the Vedic literatures compiled by Vyasadeva. And thus he's trying to emphasize describing everything in relationship with the Supreme Lord and no one else. Let the demigods be described, but in relationship to the Lord. Let the material creation be described, but in relationship to the Creator, the Lord. So therefore in the third canto, we'll hear that when Vidura goes to Maitreya Muni and he asks some questions about the creation. He says, how does everything work in the creation? But please, I only want to hear this described in relationship to the Lord. Puranas, so many historical things happen, but all in relationship to the Lord. Views and thinks something is separate from the Lord. Well, in fact, there is nothing in existence separate from him. He has to be put in the center. And worse still, text 15, the people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy. And you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. People will think that religion's purpose is to enjoy in this world. That is not the purpose of religion. No great teacher has taught that if you worship God, you'll be so fortunate because you'll enjoy in this world. No. Our real home is somewhere else. So you have encouraged them to enjoy. They're already inclined in that way. You have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. This is verily condemned. Strong words, and is quite unreasonable. Because they are guided under your instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion, and they will hardly care for prohibitions. Some from the beginning. Srila Vyasadeva's compilation of different Vedic literatures on the basis of regulated performances of fruit of activities as depicted in the Mahabharata and other literatures condemned herewith by Sri Narada. The human beings, by long material association, life after life, have a natural inclination by practice to endeavor to lord it over material nature. They have no sense of the responsibility of human life. This human form of life is a chance to get out of the clutches of illusory matter. The Vedas are meant for going back to Godhead, going back home, to revolve in the cycle of transmigration in a series of lives numbering 8,400,000 is an imprisoned life for the condemned conditioned souls. The human form of life is a chance to get out of this imprisoned life, and as such, the only occupation of the human being The only occupation of the human being is to reestablish his lost relationship with God. Under the circumstances, one should never be encouraged in making a plan for sense enjoyment in the name of religious functions. Such diversion of the human energy results in a misguided civilization. Srila Vyasadeva is the authority in Vedic explanations in the Mahabharata, etc., and his encouragement and sense enjoyment in some form or another is a great barrier for spiritual advancement because the people in general will not agree to renounce material activities which hold them in material bondage, just naturally attached. At a certain stage of human civilization, when such material activities in the name of religion, as sacrificing animals in the name of Jagya, were too much rampant, the Lord incarnated himself as Buddha and decried the authority of the Vedas in order to stop animal sacrifice in the name of religion. This was foreseen by Narada, and therefore he condemned such literatures. Strong. But then, how will people gradually make progress? You have to start from where you are. You can't make believe you're a Paramhamsa and have no material desires. No, this is not the way to describe things separately from the Lord. So, Narada continues, the Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality retired from the activities of material happiness deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual value. So he's agreed to that. Kunti Devi, he's agreed with that. Kunti Devi will say the same thing in the 8th chapter of this canto, to say, Tata Paramahamsanam, you've come for the Paramahamsas. And how could we, the less intelligent, how could we attain you? Which she'll explain right after, out of Krishna's mercy. So yes, the Lord is unlimited, and he's only great souls can understand him. Therefore, those who are not so well situated, not so great, due to material attachment, should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. Do not make it seem as if things are separate from him in any way. Any path, anything, nothing separated from him. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport, starting a little bit down. A few lines in this book, it's 2, 4, 6 lines down. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that out of many hundreds and thousands of men, only one person deserves to enter into transcendental realization. And out of many thousands of such transcendentally realized persons, only a few can understand the theological science specifically dealing with God as a person. Sri Vyasadeva is therefore advised by Narada to describe the science of God directly by relating his transcendental activities. Vyasadeva is himself a personality expert in the science, and he is unattached to material enjoyment. Therefore, he is the right person to describe it, and Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is the right person to receive it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost theological science, and therefore it can react on the layman as medicinal doses. Because it contains the transcendental activities of the Lord, there is no difference between the Lord and the literature. The literature is the factual literary incarnation of the Lord. So the layman can hear the narration of the activities of the Lord. Thereby they are able to associate with the Lord and thus gradually become purified from material diseases. The expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular times and circumstances. Devotional service is dynamic activity, and the expert devotees can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of the materialistic population. Why are the materialistic people considered dull? Because of identification with the body. Although everyone has experienced the change of bodies, even in this life, that's the dullness. Prabhupada once said that that is the real intoxication of life. Compared to identifying with the body, every other intoxication is just like salt and pepper, he said. This is the real intoxication that makes the brain dull. Such transcendental activities of the devotees for the service of the Lord can bring a new order of life to the foolish society of materialistic men. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his subsequent followers exhibited expert dexterity in this connection. By following the same method, one can bring the materialistic men of this age of quarrel into order for peace peaceful life and transcendental realization. So this is the essence. Tandira charana sevi bhakti sanivas janame janame hoy eyabilas. That the essence of the Krishna consciousness movement is to provide association where hearing and chanting about Krishna takes place. Management is meant to facilitate that. This is the essence of Krishna consciousness. But what happens if one takes up this noble endeavor and then doesn't succeed? His loss, he's lost his material life and he hasn't gained the spiritual. His gain is eternal, his loss is only apparent. We'll read from the purport. So this is recommended. Hearing about Krishna as the main means is recommended. Even though the possibility of fall down due to incompleteness of surrender is there. Therefore, the stress, I'm picking up in the middle of a sentence even, the stress is given here to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord, even if there is a chance of falling down. Because even though one falls down from the prescribed duties of devotional service, he will never forget the lotus feet of the Lord. Once engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, one will continue the service in all circumstances. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that even a small quantity of devotional service can save one from the most dangerous position. There are many instances of such examples in history. Ajamil is one of them. Saved by some devotional service, saved from horrors. Pulled away by the Yamadutas. Who's another example of someone who's saved by his devotional service that's given in the Bhagavatam? This Ajamil is one given right here. Another one? Yeah, Gajendra, another one. Good one. I wasn't thinking. Another one? Vichasura, Chitraketu. Incredible. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says Vishwanath was cursed. So here's the worst thing that can happen to someone, cursed from being in an exalted Vidyadhara, enjoying life spiritually, cursed to become a demon and die. Why? Because Krishna wanted to call him back to him quickly. Another example. Jada Bharat, very good, thank you. Thinking of a deer, becoming a deer, but still protected by the Lord by being able to remember. And then he was more careful. And yeah, those are the ones that are usually given. So Ajamil in his early life was a devotee, but in his youth he fell down. Still he was saved by the Lord in the end. No loss, only gain. And the other way, all loss, no gain. Tasyaivahitu prayati to kovido. Every man, Prabhupada's purport, is trying everywhere, is trying to obtain the greatest amount of sense enjoyment by various endeavors. Some men are busy engaged in trade, industry, economic development, political supremacy, etc. As some of them are engaged in fruitive work to become happy in the next life by attaining higher planets. It is said that on the moon, the inhabitants are fit for greater sense enjoyment by drinking soma rasa, and the pitri lokas obtained by good charitable work. So there are various programs for sense enjoyment, either during this life or in the next life or in the life after death. Some are trying to reach the moon or other planets by some mechanical arrangements, for they are very anxious to get into such planets without doing good work. But it is not to happen. By the law of the Supreme, different places are meant for different grades of living beings according to the work they have performed. We'll talk about that later. By good work only, as prescribed in the scriptures, can one attain birth in a good family, opulence, good education, and good bodily features. We see also that even in this life, one obtains a good education or money by good work. Similarly, in our next birth, we get such desirable positions only by good work. Otherwise, it would not so happen that two persons born in the same place at the same time are seen differently placed according to previous work. But all such material positions, good, great, best, are impermanent. The positions in the topmost Brahmaloka and the lowest Patala are also changeable according to our own work. The philosophically inclined person must not be tempted by such changeable positions. He should try to get into the permanent life of bliss and knowledge, where he will not be forced to come back again to the miserable material world, either in this or that planet. Miseries and mixed happiness are two features of material life, and they're obtained in Brahmaloka and other lokas also. They're obtained in the life of the demigods and also in the life of the dogs and hogs. The miseries and mixed happiness of all living beings are only different degrees and qualities, but no one is free from the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Similarly, everyone has his destined happiness also. No one can get more or less of these things simply by personal endeavor. Even if they are obtained, they can again be lost. Therefore, they cause more anxiety. We have them. We feel losing them. So therefore, one should not waste time with these flimsy things. One should only endeavor to go back to Godhead. That should be the mission of everyone's life. Prabhupada never retreated an inch from this point of view at any time. My dear Vyas, text 19, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or another, he certainly does not undergo material existence like other fruitive workers, because a person who has once relished a taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. But even though he falls down, he may fall down, this is just a little bit into the first paragraph, a devotee is never to be considered the same as a fallen karmi. A karmi suffers the results of his own fruitive reactions, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directly by the Lord himself. The sufferings of an orphan and the sufferings of a beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to take care of him. But a beloved son of a rich man, even though he appears to be on the same level as the orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father. A devotee of the Lord, due to wrong association, sometimes imitates the fruit of workers. The fruit of workers want to lord it over the material world. Similarly, a neophyte devotee foolishly thinks of accumulating some material power in exchange for devotional service. Such foolish devotees are sometimes put into difficulty by the Lord himself as a special favor. He may remove all material paraphernalia. Sometimes it is hard to see that as a special favor when Krishna's kindly crushing us. I have my own personal experiences of that. Very, very difficult to see Krishna's mercy in that. He's removing our attachments by removing everything. But yet, if one does that, can has that powerful faith and vision. Jivatiyo mukti pade sadayavak. Qualified to go to the spiritual world just by that, by seeing Krishna's mercy in everything. As a special favor, he may remove all material paraphernalia. And Prabhupada would also often quote that Harisha Tadanam Sanai in reference to his own life. Krishna refused to make him materially successful, even though he wanted to be materially successful for spiritual reasons. Continuously took away everything because Krishna had his own plan. Therefore, acceptance of Krishna's will manifest as reality, a very big part of surrender. By such action, the bewildered devotee is forsaken by all friends and relatives, and so he comes to his senses again by the mercy of the Lord and is set right to execute devotional service. It's that which is spiritual stays with us. And that's also the transcendental knowledge. That's our advancement. Why do we like it? Say if someone is really, really likes to study and accumulate knowledge, there's a transcendental taste in that.
Where is this? Oh, I see. Now I understand what you mean. Someone has heard it once, and it doesn't mean that he doesn't wish to hear it again. He's drawn into a situation where he hears and relishes again. He has a natural inclination and taste for these things. That's what's described in the end of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He's inclined. He's just naturally drawn for those things. So they may have to read it again, but it's like a review class as opposed to learning it the first time. Anyone else like to comment on that? That's how I see it. It's like, say if you've understood it and then you're hearing it again, you immediately just refreshing the mind. We should not take routes that go this way and this way and this way, and maybe I'll try that for a while. Maybe I'll try that. We should just take the direct route. And then the question comes again, what happens if we're not qualified to fully engage in just hearing and chanting like that? That's a very elaborate topic. But whatever level we have to engage on, we should always hear and chant about Krishna. At least I'm sure we'll speak about that point, the practical point. How does one engage if he's not on the level to fully surrender? But at least everyone should hear and chant about Krishna. And that will create a revolution within the lives of our own lives. I find that question comes up all the time, because Prabhupada very often preaches on the level of you shouldn't endeavor for material work and everything will come for you. And indeed, in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, Prahlad meets an avaduta who is taking up that extreme position, that he's just sitting there in the ajagra as a python and he's not doing anything. And he's asking him, and this also comes up in the 11th canto, Dattatreya, when Yadu Maharaj meets him. And this is how Yadu Maharaj, who wanted to attain, he wouldn't exchange his youth when his father asked him for it earlier, that we read about that in the 9th canto. And then but it was for a proper purpose of renunciation. And this is in the 11th canto, we see how he actually becomes renounced. From hearing from this avatut, he sees him and he's wondering, how is it possible? Everyone in the world is working so hard to maintain themselves, and you're sitting there like a python, not doing a thing, just opening your mouth, and yet you're not in any anxiety, and you're fat. How did you learn this? So, and so much is spoken about that. So in the most extreme application of this, it's still there. But yet, I've also heard Prabhupada say, the minimum work must be there. But why factories? Some work must be there, because you're in the material world. But not to engage your entire life and your time trying to change your material circumstances, because that's not going to happen. You can only get the enjoyment of your karma. You're not going to be able to change it. But some minimum work must be there in the material world. So what I've discovered from listening to Prabhupada a lot is that sort of the ultimate conclusion of this. But not, so therefore the type of life that's recommended that goes along with the Vaishnava philosophy is not the city, industrialized, technological work, it's life. It's a very simple life. A simple life where one's needs are minimized and one learns to depend on Krishna in that simple life, an agrarian-based life. That's my conclusion after having thought about it a long time and after listening a lot about it. So, because one could take, as you're saying, you're implying that one could take the point of view of I won't do any work and let my karma come. So how far do you want to take that? You won't even open your mouth when the food comes? How far do you want to take it? You can't take it to the ultimate extreme anyway.
Although, if someone is deeply realized enough, they can, practically speaking, do that. But for our sake, we do the minimum to maintain. One time, I had a business in the 70s. And every week I was sending Prabhupada money. And he said to me, when I saw him in Melbourne, he said, "It is a good business." And I said, "Good? How is it good?" You know, thinking on the level of why should, you know, work, why am I engaging to maintain my family and things like that? You know, when the devotees should be engaged in the temples and preaching, etc. And his reply was, "You have to do something. Why have factories? Why make this incredible endeavor?" Prabhupada said that in a village, if you want a pair of scissors, you go to the blacksmith and you say, "I want some scissors, I have these grains, I'll give you that." And the blacksmith makes you a pair of scissors. It's so simple. But instead of doing that, Prabhupada said, what people do is say, "Why should I make one pair of scissors? I'll make a million pairs of scissors. And then I have to get my marketing network all together and organized. And then I have to package them properly. And I have to send people all over the world to sell them and advertise them, the world's best pair of scissors. The scissors. And then have beautiful women holding these scissors. And everyone look at crashes." And and then the salesman has to get their percentage, and the advertisers get their percentage, and the factory workers have to get their percentage. So the price of scissors, and then people have to get high-paid jobs and credit cards just to afford the pair of scissors. So instead of going through this really laborious system to try to enjoy the material world, just keep it simple and ask the blacksmith, "Can I please make me a pair of scissors?" So that's really what Prabhupada meant. And the second thing he meant was that even if you try to use this incredible, complicated method to increase your enjoyment, unless your karma is to enjoy and to gain material wealth, unless it's sanctioned by Krishna, you're not going to get it anyway. You're not, your endeavor isn't all in all. That's another whole philosophical angle on it. Your endeavor isn't all in all in making you successful or not, and bringing you happiness. So what do the devotees do? Well, we're aspiring to devotees. What do we do? We work, because you can't even maintain your body without work. But we try to keep it simple. That's ideal. So that our time, and ideally the best kind of work is the work that engages us directly in hearing and chanting. And therefore, what kind of work did Prabhupada want the devotees to engage in? Two specific kind of works for the preaching. What kind? Book distribution. Why? So that you're talking about the books all the time. And he also said about life membership making, because you're talking about Krishna. So we, with our convoluted minds, we work out ways that we can do all those things without talking about Krishna. And we tend to make things complicated. But the essence of all the instructions is to be somehow smartavya satatam vishnu vismartavya na jatachit sarva vidina shenacha etya eva kinkara. So the devotees, they wander in the world, the paramhamsas, they wander in the world, and whatever happens to them, they see Krishna's hand. They live simply. You read the songs of Narottama Das and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, examine the lives of the great devotees. Narottama Das says, "When will the day come when I wander in Braj? When I'm thirsty, I'll take a little water of the Yamuna. When I'm hungry, as Gorkhashor Das Babaji, and there's no food around, take some Yamuna sand and eat it or something. Just to stop, just so I can think Krishna, 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 and fulfill the purpose of my life." So well, maybe not on that level, but we should keep it as simple as possible. Minimum. Some devotees take
They have karma for making lots of money, so they can run something complicated and then give the money for Krishna. And they're thinking, if they can think that I'm running this is Krishna's business, and I'm just managing it on his behalf, they can really think like that without false ego, then they'll be thinking about Krishna all the time also. Prabhupada explains that side in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, what's the proper attitude towards a devotee who has fallen? It depends on the state of his consciousness, certainly. One time I asked Prabhupada, how should I treat a particular devotee who is not in the good graces of the movement? And Prabhupada's reply was, you should treat him with respect. A Vaishnava treats everyone with respect. Sometimes if a devotee is in consciousness where he's very, very critical and things like that, the respect may be from a distance. But inside, we should be respectful. Prabhupada said, a Vaishnava treats everyone with respect, even an ant. So sometimes we have to keep away from certain people. Do you want to? I'm sure we could discuss that for quite a while. Would you like to discuss more? Anyone like to make comment on that? And then looking at it from another side, what's the need of judging anyone unless it's specifically your duty to? Because it usually just turns into just gossip.
That's another angle.
Yeah. Another angle is...
who are you to judge, right?
All those who are not fallen should judge those who are fallen.
Well, like Bhaktisiddhanta.
Another angle on it. Yeah. And also, but then also you have to be practical. Where did I get that from?
Yes.
I think it was from the book Saraswati Thakur. One who's actually come to the conclusion that you can't be happy in this, nothing I could do in this material world, no gain in the material world, no situation can actually make me happy. I don't want this. One who's actually reached that conclusion has taken the greatest step towards going back to God.
Can you be satisfied by any material
thing? I'm paraphrasing it, what it was. But he's just concluded. You know, he's gotten his list. You know, I've already wanted a bicycle, and I've had that, and it had made me happy. You know, I've gotten a big house. I've gotten this. I have this money in the bank. I've tried that. I've gotten the fastest computer. I've been this, I've been that. You know, he's gone through his whole list and he's imagined that everything that he still desires that would satisfy him. And he's read about all the people who have those things and they're not happy. So he's actually concluded in his heart, in his mind, it's just not worth it. Nothing's going to make me happy. So one who's actually deeply reached that conclusion, he's taken the greatest step towards going back to Godhead. Not superficially, but one who's actually reached that conclusion. Regardless of anything external, it's just not... He's definitely in Maya. But he can't... Because Krishna is very, very kind. That's how it's possible. Because he's more kind than we are. Because when someone turns their back on us or hurts us or slaps us in one way or another, we want to give them as much trouble as possible. Or at least that's a tendency of an envious spirit. So we want to fix them and shall teach them a lesson. And we don't want them to be happy at all. But Krishna never rejects any soul at all. So, out of his causeless mercy, he lets them remember whatever it is that they experienced that was wonderful. From time to time, not at every moment, but from time to time, he's so kind that he reminds them and they can't totally forget him. Even though we see that with some kind, sometimes devotees, as you said, with sometimes the kids, they'll take intoxication, especially intoxication, because they want to forget. They want to forget Krishna, but they can't. And sometimes, and sometimes they become angry that they can't forget. I once not a Gurukula kid.
Huh?
Yeah. One time when Jagatini Mataji and I were preaching in Hong Kong, she had preached to this young Indian boy who was in Hong Kong, who had come to Hong Kong to make money. And because of the strength of her preaching, he was following the four rules and chanting 16 rounds a day. But he really wanted to make money. So he prayed to Krishna, and he couldn't enjoy himself. He couldn't enjoy himself because he was following the four rules and chanting 16 rounds a day. So he actually prayed to Krishna to cover him up with Maya so he'd be able to forget him, Krishna. He prayed to Krishna. That's such a strange combination of faith and material desire. So he prayed to Krishna, "You're so kind to all living entities and you satisfy their desires. So please cover me up so I can enjoy life again." And you know what Krishna did? He covered him up because that's what he wanted. He was actually being pulled along by the strength of the preaching of association of a devotee. But yet, whatever he gained was a gain. Okay, Hare Krishna. So tomorrow, we'll see about maybe completing a few of the purports we neglected to read, but we'll move on to the story of Narada Muni. Very interesting, because Narada Muni, he's preaching so strongly to Vyasadeva. Now he's going to explain how he attained his own realizations on this point. The importance of this Krishna Katha. How important it is. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Narada Muni ki jai. Srila Vyasadeva ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.